Well, good morning, and it's my privilege this morning to introduce you to the president of the Synod of 1618-19, the great Synod of Dort. You can well imagine that that would be a pretty significant position, and that God, who had planned the Synod of Dort from eternity, also determined the man who would guide the Synod, and that man would be Johannes Bogerman. Let me tell you a little bit about him. According to Reverend Josh Inglesma, who wrote a fine article on him, and it's in the Protestant Reformed Journal, available online. Reverend Inglesma wrote this: he was one of the most respected, highly respected theologians of the day, and played a prominent role at Dort. He fought Arminius and his disciples before the Synod. He was elected by his fellow delegates to preside at the Synod. With a firm and steady hand, he guided the Synod through months of difficult and important deliberations, and he contributed directly to the composition of the canons. Who is Johannes Bogerman? Well, his father was also named Johannes, and his father was a converted priest who came to the Reformed faith and was then totally devoted to it. He became a minister in the Reformed churches. He married a Frisian woman and fled to East Friesland, which is Germany, due to the persecution that we talked about a bit last night. The Spanish pushing up at one point endangered all of the ministers of Friesland, and he was forced to flee into Germany. While he was there, then, his son Johannes was born in 1576 in the East Frisian, that would be in the German side then, of Oppelwart, Germany. At age 4, they moved back to Friesland, the Netherlands, and at age 15, he entered the Academy of Franeker. That's quite not terribly unusual, but 15 years old, can you imagine sending your 15-year-old son off to the university? And that's where he began his instruction toward the ministry. He was an excellent student, and he was particularly well known for his ability in Hebrew, the language of the Old Testament, which becomes important as we go forward. It was quite common in those days that a man who would be a minister also would get, after he got his degree in the seminary of the Netherlands, would go and visit other seminaries around Europe, and this was no exception for Johannes Bogerman. He would go to Germany, Switzerland, and England. First of all, to Germany, he would go to Heidelberg, obviously well known for the Heidelberg Catechism. It was still solidly Reformed at that time. To Switzerland, he would go to Geneva, where he would study under Beza. And last night I said that Beza was 80 years old when Arminius was there. That's not true. I got my facts mixed up. He was 80 years old at this point, but still teaching. From there, Johannes Bogerman went to Zurich and then to Lausanne and then to England, where he visited and studied for a little while at both Oxford and Cambridge. You can see the two circles there on the map that are related to London on the bottom. So his foreign studies took him to the major Reformation centers in Europe, and he met the major Reformation teachers and other men, some of whom would actually come to the Synod of Dort and be delegates there at that appointed time. The goal, of course, is the ministry of the Word, and in the summer of 1559, he returned to the Netherlands as a candidate for the ministry. His pastorate, first of all, was in Snake, Friesland, where he did polemics against the Anabaptists of the area. His next pastorate was in Enkhuizen, North Holland, in 1603, where his main effort of polemics was against a man who had greatly influenced Arminius. Wigerts was a man who came into conflict with the Reformed confessions on justification by faith and predestination. And then his final place was Leeuwarden in Friesland in 1604, and there his major opponent was the Jesuits, whose theology, of course, was very similar to Arminius in many regards. At this point in his time, he is obviously becoming well known for his ability, and he served as the president of the Provincial Synod in Friesland in 1605, 10, and 15. The Arminian controversy, of course, is brewing at this time, and Prince Maurice, in January of 1617, sided with the counter-remonstrants. At this point, he had been worshiping in a church that had an Arminian preacher. But then in January, he sided with the counter-remonstrants, and they took over a large church in The Hague. And in 1618, Domine Bogerman was asked to preach in that church, the Klosterkirk in The Hague. And he did that for 5 months. His congregation let him go there because they understood the importance of that meeting in The Hague, where Prince Maurice was worshiping. The Synod of Dort then in 1618, three elders and three ministers were sent by the Provincial Synod of Friesland, and one of those delegates was Bogerman. The Synod of Dort convened in November 13, 1618. They had a worship service in the Grote Kerk in that day, and the next day they met and elected the president of Synod, and it would be Domine Bogerman, a man obviously committed to the Reformed faith, a man capable, and a man who was in a region of Friesland where there wasn't much of an Arminian presence. It was very staunchly Reformed, and all of those things played in the favor of his selection. So 180 sessions of Synod he would preside over for the next 6 months, from November 14 to May 28, over 6 months. As the president of Synod, he would have to deal first with the remonstrants. 13 of them were summoned by the government to testify there at the Synod, and the spokesman of that was Simon Episcopius. The remonstrants claimed that they were coming to a conference, and that at this conference there would be a nice discussion of their theological differences, and they would hammer their differences out. And Synod replied, no, this is not a conference. This is a synod, and you are on trial, and your views, your theology is on trial. For weeks, the synod tried to get the remonstrants to say what exactly they believed, but to no avail. Finally, the patience of the delegates was exhausted, and Bogerman therefore addressed them with this fiery, well-known speech. You boast, he said to the remonstrants, that many foreign divines did not refuse to grant your request. Their moderation arose from a misunderstanding. They now declare that they were deceived by you. They say that you are no longer worthy of being heard by the Synod. You may pretend what you please, but the great point of your obstinacy is that you regard the Synod as a party in the case. Thus you have long delayed us. You have been treated with all gentleness, friendliness, toleration, patience, and simplicity. Go as you came. You began with lies, and you end with them. You are full of fraud and double dealing. You are not worthy that the Synod should treat with you further. Depart, leave. You began with a lie, and with a lie you ended. Go. And so the Arminians left. And the Synod then had to turn to the writing of the answer to their heresies, the canons, as they would become known. Bogerman's contribution to that was significant. He had written a response to the remonstrants' first point where they taught conditional election. And he read his draft to the delegates of the Synod, and it was largely approved. But many delegates, especially the foreign ones, didn't like this way of having Bogerman do all the work. They thought it ought to be more of a joint effort, and they convinced the synodical deputies of that same, the representatives from the government, And what happened eventually is a committee was appointed then who would be the draft committee for the canons. The nine-man committee would include Bogerman and the two vice presidents. It would include three other Dutch delegates, professors and minister, and three foreign delegates, the man from England, George Carleton, the man from Heidelberg, Abraham Scultetus, and from Geneva, Johannes Diodati. So those nine men would prepare the drafts, which would then be submitted to the entire body for their approval. Just a note that, and I can't read this all here now, but Bogerman's draft is on the left. The actual first article of Head 1 is on the right-hand side. And you notice, if you can read it, that what was added is simply this part, which is more proof text. The wording of the first head, Article 1, is really Bogerman's. And you can see that it follows through, really all through the first head of doctrine, that he shaped, wrote those articles. And again, Reverend Josh Inglesma's article does that. He goes through them article by article and demonstrates the tremendous impact that Bogerman had on the canons of Dort, especially the first head. His contribution to the canons then, as I said, he wrote the most of the articles of Head 1. He headed the draft committee, and in it all, a pastor he was. He had his eye on the sheep. They need a document that will speak to them. He wasn't interested in a highfalutin theological treatise. We need something the people can understand. And that's what he pressed for continually, a pastoral document, answering the arguments, refuting the errors, setting forth the truth in a way the people of God could understand. After the synod, he went back to his pastorate in Leeuwarden, but he was involved in Bible translation. He was one of the three men who were appointed to the Old Testament translation. They had a delayed start. The first time they got to meet was in his home in November of 1626, and the Old Testament scholars finished their translation 6 years later. The revisions followed. A number of people were involved in the revision, and the final product was not printed until 1637. We'll talk about that later more today. He was also to become Professor Bogerman. The University of Franeker requested him already in 1614, seeing his ability, wanting him to become a professor of theology, but his congregation refused to release him. Franeker called him again in 1633, and his congregation finally agreed a year later to allow him to be a professor in the seminary. However, he said, "I'm only going to come when the translation is finally finished of the scriptures." And he came to Franeker in December of 1636, and he died in September of 37. He spent himself for the work, particularly of translating the scriptures into the Dutch language. Johannes Bogerman, surely of him it can be said, as Paul said, "I have fought a good fight, I have finished my course, I have kept the faith." A man clearly prepared by God, and a man who was used to guide the synod in its deliberations.